You're listening to TIP.
On today's show, I bring back Artem Milinchuk. He was back on episode 46 of the Millennial Investing Podcast. And today we talk about investing in an alternative asset class that likely isn't top of mind for most people, and that's farmland investing. It has a lot of characteristics similar to real estate investing and might make for a good investment for a percentage of your portfolio. Artem has over 11 years of finance experience in food, agriculture, and farmland. Prior to founding Farm Together, Artem was employee number one and CFO/VP of operations at Full Harvest Technologies, a now post-Series A B2B platform for buying and selling produce. He previously worked at Ontario Teachers Pension Plan, Sprott Resource Holdings, EY, and PwC. Artem holds an MBA from the Wharton School and a BA and MA in economics from the Higher School of Economics. You'll hear throughout this episode that not only does Artem clearly know his stuff and is brilliant, but he's also very passionate about it, and it makes for a great content, and I really hope you guys enjoy this episode. Without further delay, let's jump right into this week's episode with Artem Milinchuk.
You're listening to Real Estate Investing by the Investors Podcast Network, where your host, Robert Leonard, interviews successful investors from various real estate investing niches to help educate you on your real estate investing journey.
Hey everyone, welcome back to this week's episode of the Real Estate Investing Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Robert Leonard. And with me today, I have Artem Milinchuk. Welcome to the show, Artem.
Good to be back, Robert.
Let's start our conversation today by talking a bit about you. For those listening to this episode that didn't hear your last episode on my other show, Millennial Investing, which was episode 46, tell us who you are and how you got to where you are today.
My name is Artem Milinchuk, born in Soviet Union, raised in Russia, and moved to Canada in 2007. And now we're based in San Francisco since 2018. So a little bit all over the globe, but all of these countries, as you can imagine, have a huge ag industry. They supply the world with food. And I think it's a very natural kind of geographical transition that I have made. But on a personal note, the reason that I got really interested in food and farmland, honestly, it kind of stems just from seeing and living through that very tumultuous time in the 90s and the 80s, where transition of Soviet Union to Russia, Russia crazy times in the 90s, and oftentimes you didn't have like very basic staples on the shelves. You know, I like to joke that the Cold War wasn't one with nukes, but with full food shelves in the West. And it's true. First thing that people would say when they, you know, were able to get out from the, you know, the Iron Curtain, the wall, and come back, there's so much food in the West. And so it's just something that always, it's great to build your life on something stable, immovable, necessary. And food and water is that. No matter what happens, unless we become, you know, sentient AIs, Elon Musk sends us to Mars. And even there, you know, you need food. And so it's great to build your career as well as your investment on that. So personally and professionally, I spent before Farm Together almost 10 years in finance around food and agriculture. I worked for a big pension fund. I worked for a smaller private equity fund in Canada for a family office. And right before Farm Together, I was actually the first employee at a marketplace for fruits and vegetables called Full Harvest, which is also a Silicon Valley startup, solving very important problem of food waste at farm level. And so that's kind of been my professional background for the past, you know, almost 15 years now. And Farm Together really was born out of this desire to solve a personal problem in a way, which is how do I invest in farmland and how do I invest in farmland as a professional investor? And so we'll get to that, but that's my background up to date.
Having the professional background that you do and spending so many years in finance and in private equity, what made you want to become an entrepreneur? The entrepreneur world is tumultuous, it's volatile, and it sounds like you probably had a pretty stable, high earning corporate job. So why leave that world to become an entrepreneur?
I ask those questions myself sometimes. It's definitely has been a transition. And I think, you know, the reason I wanted to do this is because I just could not help myself. I love investing. I think it's the most intellectually stimulating job in the world. But one thing you don't get to do in investing is build things, is to actually look at a company and say, oh man, I bet I could do better. Like, oh, I bet I could do differently. And, you know, my parents, my grandparents actually, all fairly entrepreneurial. And I think it's a little bit in my blood. And so I think with Farm Together, it was this unique opportunity to still stay in what I really like, investing, food, agriculture, but also be a builder and build an investment company, an investment and tech platform that would feed my passion of investing, but also feed my passion of being a builder. And I think we kind of got the best of both worlds here. So I feel very lucky, very fortunate.
As investors, we can tell the management companies or the management team at companies that we don't like what they're doing and that we could do a better job, but they probably don't care what we have to say. Today's topic, we've alluded to it so far, is one that a lot of people probably aren't familiar with yet. I know I hadn't been prior to our previous conversation. So to set the stage, what exactly is farmland investing?
Let's just define what is farmland investing and what it is not. Farmland investing is exactly what it sounds like. You're investing in land. And it's very important to distinguish from maybe some other things like a dairy factory or a grain elevator or a food company. This is really land, productive, fertile land that grows your stuff, your food. Farmland can be broadly specified or broadly broken down in US in three categories. So you have pasture land. This is where your cows graze, your livestock. We don't really touch that. And cropland, which is where Farm Together plays. Just to give a bit more context, in US, farmland is a $2.5 trillion market asset class. Of that, about $700-900 billion is pasture land, and the rest is cropland. So cropland is divided into two more categories. You have row crops. This is your corn, your soybeans. It's stuff that's planted in rows. It's kind of annual row crops. Although, you know, the second segment is permanent crops, which is also typically in rows. It's not in weird shapes. But the name there is permanent crops, and it's your tree nuts, it's your citruses, your apples, basically something that your bushes as well. So it's something that is there permanently. And when you invest in land, the way you make money as an investor is that you typically will rent out the land to a farmer. So it's a very common practice, actually. So most of farmland is owned by individuals, but 40% of that land is actually rented out today. And you make money from that in a variety of ways. So rent is being one of them. But unlike real estate, which I think we'll talk about in a little bit, the comparison to real estate, but farmland, you make money from rent. You also make money from revenue share, where you can take more of that exposure to the crop prices and yields. Profit share, where you actually do get to participate in the profit of the farmers. You also take risk on the inputs, on the cost of fertilizer, cost of labor, cost of equipment. And in the kind of the most complex way, which is a lot of what Farm Together does as well, is you can have a direct operate model. Well, you will contract it out to a farmer. Typically, this is a more established farming company, farming family that does more of that contract work. And so they will do everything for you, but they will take no risk, no financial risk in operating it. So you've got to trust them. You've got to make sure that they are high quality operator, which we always do. And in that last case, that's typically where you will have, you know, the highest returns as well. So that's kind of farmland investing in a nutshell, no pun intended.
So why crops only? Why don't you invest in pasture land?
It's a good question. Pasture land is an absolutely valid, viable market. But the thing about farmland investing in farmland market, it's such a new space. It's what some people call a blue ocean, as opposed to red ocean, where there's a lot of competition. A blue ocean is one where it's Pacific Ocean, or discovering the new world, America, in a way, rediscovering it almost, where competition doesn't really define your market. And so that's what farmland investing is. Right now, it's still such a new space that you're not really competing that much. And the reason we don't touch pasture land is because cropland is such a huge space, and that's where our experience lies as a team. Most of our people come from the cropland investing. So we just don't touch pasture land because it's not what our team really knows well. It's absolutely a viable, you know, market, and maybe one day we'll expand to it.
So let's talk about how farmland investing is similar or might not be similar to traditional real estate investing. I'm also a real estate investor. A lot of people listening to the show today are real estate investors. And I hear you talking about how you own the land and then you rent that out to farmers and then you could potentially have some revenue share, things of that nature. For me, it sounds like just buying an apartment building or multifamily building, renting it out to tenants and collecting rent. So it sounds very similar, just a different type of property, if you will. So how is it similar? How is it a little bit different?
I think broadly, farmland is, in my view, a subsegment of real estate. That's kind of where I see it. But it has also a number of characteristics of infrastructure and timber. I think it really is a new asset class, but if you want to bucket it for now, I think real estate is a great bucket to be in. I encourage, so I'll talk about the comparison to real estate, but I encourage your listeners to check out an article we penned together with Nav Athwal, who is a real estate entrepreneur as well, in Forbes called 5 Ways Farmland Investing Compares to Traditional Real Estate, for a more in-depth discussion of that. And you can also see on our website. But let me summarize it here. The reason it's so similar to real estate is because you're primarily taking a real asset that has a productive value that is independent of the kind of the values primarily in the asset, not necessarily in the management team. Although, of course, you know, the management team matters. So unlike maybe a stock, you know, if you take something like, let's say, a Tesla, and you were to fire everyone at Tesla, well, that stock would go to zero. If you were, you know, hypothetically to change the farming team on your land, the value of your land would still be preserved to almost 100% degree. And that's because it's really about the value of the land. So I think that's where farming is very much like real estate. Now, moving on from that kind of abstract philosophical thinking, more specifically, the investment structure. Both real estate and farmland typically have debt on it. It's typically, you know, a sort of, and oftentimes structured as an income producing property, as an income trust, as a REIT. And so it's very similar to that. So that would be one. Like real estate, the returns are kind of primarily two components. It's your price appreciation and your current income. Unlike real estate, though, farmland actually does not depreciate. It only depreciates in a physical way. It really mostly appreciates in value, especially if you take care of the soil. So every year, if you farm correctly and enriches the soil and enriches the productivity. Real estate, it grows in value because of the typically supply demand, especially in the right markets. But unlike farmland, it has that physical depreciation. So you need to take care of it and maintain it. So you do have lower maintenance expenses in farmland. Another way that it's kind of similar is that you have a cap rate approach to it to a certain extent. So real estate moves pretty heavily in line with, well, inversely with interest rates. The lower the interest rates, the lower your cap rates go up, the higher the value of real estate. It's the same with farmland. It's very much a cap rate income generating asset that trades based on where, you know, 10-year, 30-year treasuries are. It's definitely a yield-sensitive, a rate-sensitive investment product. Location matters a lot. I mean, I would say in real estate, it's location, location, location. In farmland, it's probably like location, location. So location matters. Water matters. You want to be in a vibrant ecosystem. But if you're sort of buying, you know, in real estate, neighborhood like really matters, right? A great neighborhood can make or break a property. In farmland, it's still somewhat a commodity. You have a good piece of farmland in good water district with right operators and you produce almonds. Those almonds are going to be valuable whether you are near San Francisco, whether you're somewhere else. It's still the same almonds. And so there's that kind of location matters to sort of course, to a great extent, but not as much as in real estate. Same as real estate, you have value-added investments. You could do development, redevelopment, transitioning to organic, to regenerative. So there's that kind of value-added component as well that you can do that I think is really exciting in farmland. So you can build a very pleasantly boring portfolio of farmland that is, you know, high quality, good corn, soybean, good, you know, almonds, good water that just generates cash flows. Or you can go and do like some crazy redevelopment, really up to you. So there's always this different parts of farmland. And then lastly, I think what we touched on a little bit, so it's kind of a lease product. But what's really interesting to note is that oftentimes in farmland, the leases are paid upfront for the year and you don't take any risk on the harvest and the price. Whereas in real estate, you know, your rents are monthly, the tenant risk is substantial, people can move away. In farmland, when you're in the right area, which is the areas we operate in, you typically have 10, 15 farmers lining up to rent and they pay that rent upfront so that tenant risk is actually almost non-existent in farmland, which is completely not the case in real estate. That's why, you know, when you look at row crop returns in the last 20, 30 years, and I know we'll talk a bit more about that, but the volatility there is so low, it's almost like a slowly declining line of cash yield to about 5% in 1992 to about 4-3.5% now because of rates, but very low volatility. And that's because that the certainty of leases is really high. So I know that was a lot. Thank you for listening, Robert and everyone. But it's just, yeah, it's remarkable how many similarities and some differences farmland has to real estate.
We certainly have that tenant risk in traditional real estate, and especially right now during coronavirus. I mean, you hear about it all over the country. The evictions have been stopped and there's nothing landlords can do about it. So you have major tenant risk right now. And it doesn't sound like that would be an issue with farmland. And you mentioned the Forbes article. For anybody listening that wants to check out that article, I'll be sure to put a link to it in the show notes. So be sure to check that out below in your favorite podcast player and go give that a read. So how does farmland investing fit into the universe of broader alternative investments and even other crowdfunding options?
You know, farmland emerging as an asset class. Well, first of all, you know, it's always funny to me when people say like, oh, what is this new exotic thing, farmland? It's the oldest asset class. That's literally how a civilization came about. So it's really just rediscovering. That new is just well-forgotten old, as they say. And so farmland is really following in the foothills of a much broader trend of alternative investments emerging, which has been the trend for the last 40 years. And alternatives is real estate, it's gold, to a certain extent, it's crypto, it's infrastructure, it's timber, it's all this new, you know, you mentioned other crowdfunding platform, like crazy stuff like exotic cars and art, and even more exotic things like shares in racehorses. That's definitely a non-correlated asset right there. And this is all driven by the, well, one, by the last 40 years being dominated by this philosophical and academic notion of what's called a 60-40 portfolio, which is the right portfolio for an investor, 60-40 of stocks and bonds, and you can fluctuate a little bit depending on you. And that has done quite well in the last 40 years. But as that kind of space got crowded, and also as interest rates have collapsed to almost zero now, pension funds, endowments, foundations, insurance companies, defined benefit plans have found themselves in a situation where they have promised returns and payouts that they just cannot deliver investing as they have before. And before, you just go as a pension fund, they would invest, you take money from your pension plan members and invest into US treasuries with 4-5% return risk-free. I mean, that's the best thing ever, right? And they were promising returns and payouts based on that, and they just cannot reach that anymore. So they realized they have to take on risk. And regulations have changed, investment policy have changed. We're talking about capital that is in the trillions of dollars. And so now they're increasingly going to all these other places opening up. So alternative investments have come out of nowhere. Now it was a $3.3 trillion mark in 2008, which is very small given the global capital markets. It's about $9 trillion today and projected to reach $13, $14 trillion by 2023, 2024 and has no sign of stopping. At one point, alternative investing will just be called investing. And in your portfolio, you will have stocks, bonds, real estate, a little bit of gold, farmland, of course, crypto, all these other things. And it'll just be a well-diversified portfolio. And so farmland really is following in the footsteps of that much broader trend. And you can see that forward-looking pension funds such as Ontario Teachers, which was an early entrant in infrastructure, for example, is adding massively to their farmland holdings. And more funds, individual investors are opening up. What I like about farmland right now as a market, about 98% of farmland is still owned by individual investors and by this sort of non-structured investors and farmers. And this is massively changing because average age of farmers approaching 60. They all are retiring, kids don't want to farm. And so that's why we expect about 70% of farmland to change hands in the next 20 years. A lot of this will go to that kind of institutional investors, to formalized investors. And I think unlike a lot of other asset classes where, you know, a more retail investor, which I would imagine is most of your listeners, is forced to kind of follow the quote unquote smart money, right? The pension funds, the hedge funds that discover this new space, they move in and then you're kind of like, okay, now I get to invest everyone else had the pick. I think what we have here is an opportunity for the retail investor to actually be the first mover to pick up the juiciest properties, the best opportunities, while institutions catch up and start deploying capital into the market. So excited to be kind of at the forefront of that for sure.
Yeah, that's one of the cool things about technology is that in a lot of the regulation changes, because this wasn't available, what was it, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, this type of investing wouldn't be available to the public. So the advancements that we're seeing both legally and legislatively and also technologically is great for new investors. And one of the things that I really like, if I can say this about this show, is that we don't talk about real estate as the only asset class. And I talk about this a bit on the show because a lot of real estate podcasts, they're great, but they always talk about how real estate is the only asset class that you should be invested in, how it's the holy grail. And I do think it's a great asset class, but I think stocks, bonds, and mutual funds also have a great place in people's portfolio. So the people listening to the show today often have a good understanding of stock investing as well as real estate. So how does farmland investing compare to that more traditional style of investing, finding undervalued stocks or bonds and even mutual funds?
I think still stocks and bonds should be the core of anyone's portfolio. And we're not advocating that you replace everything with real estate and farmland. Of course not. We think a few percentage points will really help with diversification. And you will talk about that with income, with the preservation of capital. But in terms of how it compares to stocks and bonds, and investing, honestly, there's a lot of similarities. It's still the same comprehensive due diligence process you do to find areas that people aren't looking at, to do still a lot of fundamental research into the end markets. For example, we'll have a hazelnut deal on the platform right now. We've done a lot of research understanding the demand and supply of hazelnuts. And so that allows you to make an informed bet on why, you know, hazelnut demand will increase in the future, why supply will not overwhelm that demand, and be able to make a smart investment for 10 years. My background is actually value investing, long-term investing. This is a very natural extension to me to be thinking about the world long-term and not get caught up in particular cycles and, you know, yearly fads, things like that. But we went further than stock investing in how we approach farmland investing. And what I mean by that is that we have built a comprehensive technology that allows us to actually underwrite better, faster, cheaper than we would with stocks, and to be able to analyze data that is just impossible to synthesize and collect with just sort of a non-tech-enabled human. And I think that's where I use what I saw as some shortcomings in the investment world, to be honest, where people still use outdated Excel tools that are prone to mistakes, use kind of manual methods, collecting information, saying like, why are we doing this? You know, there's people, you know, Elon Musk is sending rockets to Mars. How come I'm still using the same Excel model I used 12 years ago? And so we're actually also doing a lot of innovation in that regard.
So if someone were to make an investment in a model like this, in a farmland investment, how and when does an investor even see a return?
Three things there. One is farmland investing is long-term investing, definitely not for people who are looking for short-term kind of bang for the buck. We recommend 8 to 10 year hold period. And it is I think for someone who is truly investing to meet their financial goals, who is thinking about it from a kind of goal-oriented perspective, retirement, college education for their kids, safety for their portfolios, meet some other financial goals. Farmland is great for that because it's kind of stable, long-term. But in terms of how you see your returns, depending on the deal, you get to see your returns starting year one, where you get your cash payouts from the rent on the farm. It easily can be that. Or sometimes there's a few years where it's a development deal, after which the cash income kicks in. And then, of course, the price appreciation of the land due to development, due to long-term trends and value appreciation are realized at sale. So because of farmland being such a remarkable inflation-protected income-generating asset, typically deals that give you that cash flow straight away tend to be expensive. And so the current income, you're not going to get like 10% cash income year one. If you want that like cash flow, invest in the deals that have a few years of zero returns while we develop the property, but then the cash flows kick in and say 5, 7, 10%. If you want something that will be cash flowing straight away, look for deals that we have that have that component where sometimes it'll be, you know, 5-6% return year one, the rent, or 2-3% if it's a low risk investment, which oftentimes when we heard from our investors, they see it almost like T-bills, you know, TIPS, bonds that are backed by land. There's different deals for different people. But having said that, we are developing a secondary market where you'll be able to sell your stake in a secondary liquidity market. We plan to have pilot launching in Q4 of this year. So it's going to be there. Stay tuned. And 2021, we want to have that something that will start coming in fairly frequently, maybe every year first and then every quarter and then maybe even real time. Who knows? And we've seen this happen on other platforms for real estate, like Cadre has a fairly successful secondary market now. We can see that working quite well. And so definitely, I think that in the next few years, you'll have a vibrant secondary liquidity market. We expect that to happen. Of course, you don't count on it just yet, but it's our full intention to develop it that will allow you to exit your deal much sooner than 8-10 years.
Yeah, it's really interesting to hear about that secondary market because I actually invest in some private companies through a platform called Start Engine. It's like equity crowdfunding, essentially, and they just launched a secondary market where you're able to trade these private securities. Well, it hasn't actually launched yet, but as of this recording, but as over the next month or two, I think they're supposed to launch it, which is going to be really interesting for equity crowdfunding. That's one of the big issues with it right now is you're usually locked into those positions for a long, long time. And a lot of people have an issue with that, especially mom and pop private investors who are making these types of deals. So to be able to have a secondary market, almost like a public security where you're able to trade it, is going to be interesting. Who knows really what that's going to look like, but it could be really interesting, especially for a farmland holding that if you decide you had to get out before the long-term hold period is over. So that's really interesting.
I see no legal, technical, or business impediments to that. It's a very common thing. You really just have a bulletin board. I'm selling this farm for X. This is what this farm profile looks like. This is what's appraised value. and the value of the land, you know, what's beautiful about it, it's really just what's the expected rent, what's the expected price, and we provide that information. So I like to be conservative in how I guide our investors and clients towards the future, but I have firm conviction that this is a solved problem, a secondary market. It's just a question of getting, you know, one foot in front of the other to bring it to our clients. So yeah, absolutely excited about this part of the business.
That's a really interesting development. I'm excited to watch it unfold, both for Farm Together as well as some other platforms that I'm involved in. So definitely exciting times. It's also said that investors can expect 7 to 10% annual return on average from the stock market. What are some of the typical returns that you're seeing when investing in farmland?
I'm such an academic. So I've studied economics in did a bachelor's, a master's, and MBA. And so I always start very high level. I hope you and your listeners can bear with me, but it's just important to outline the history first. And so when we look at the last 100 years in the stock market, I mean, it has done tremendously well. The returns have been phenomenal. And as Warren Buffett says, you know, if you just stay in the stock market, you'll do well. And that's still, I think, is the case. But here's the thing. We have seen, so I'll read off some numbers, but we have seen tremendous returns in the capital markets in the last 20, 30, 40 years. If we look at the returns of actually the stock market, the economy itself hasn't grown as quickly as the stock market. And so what it tells you is that one is that there's more kind of the economy being financialized through the different financial instruments, but B, that the increase in productivity has flown to capital. So there's a massive issue we won't get into it right now, but if you look at the last 40 years, productivity of the US worker has grown tremendously, but the wage has stagnated. And what it tells you is that all the fruits of labor have actually flown to capital. And the expectations of massive macro thinkers, BlackRock, JP Morgan, for what the returns look like for those markets last in the next 10, 20 years, actually fairly modest. It's something like 5, 6% of the returns that we expect for equities as an asset class for real estate. And it's really that you need to either take on more risk or go into specific segments to get that. From 1999 to 2019, we've seen the following returns. Stocks have been about 10% annual with 17% volatility. Farmland has done a little bit better than that, actually 11.2% return with 6.6% volatility. Real estate was about 8% with 8% volatility, and bonds were about 5.96 with 5% volatility. That's from 1999 to 2019. If we look at a longer time period, 78 to 2019, farmland was about 8.5% return with 5.7% volatility, and stocks were about 10% with 15% volatility. Real estate was about 9%. Sorry for rattling off all these numbers, but I think broadly we can say that farmland, real estate, and stocks do a little bit better with much higher volatility, but they, of course, are very liquid. Real estate and farmland, less volatile, much less, so returns are comparable. If we look at the metric Sharpe ratio, returns divided by volatility, which is what professional investors look at, and farmland looks the best, almost 1.5% Sharpe ratio. And you know, our expectation for farmland as an asset class would be kind of in that 7%, 8% range. I think there's the growing population, improving diets, decreasing supply of farmland and water, climate change. There's really serious trends of land of value going up. And we're actually at a, you know, race against time in a way, because we need to double the food produced into 2050 compared to 2009 on the decreasing supply of farmland. So there is, of course, ag tech is growing and, you know, humans are phenomenal and very innovative, but we are facing, you know, some real nature challenges, and that productivity will not be taken for granted. So I would say land, our expectation is to continue delivering strong returns. It's not going to be historical 11, 12%. That's just crazy for anything, for any asset class broadly. But we expect solid returns that will compare to the stock market, definitely better than the bond market, and definitely, I think, better than gold, because you can eat food.
So far, everything we've talked about regarding farmland has been pretty great. So let's talk about the other side for a second. What are the major risks that investors are exposed to when they're investing in farmland?
Of course, as any other investment, farmland comes with risks. And I would say, starting from kind of very high level in terms of farmland being like real estate and like any sort of interest rate sensitive product, when rates go down, farmland does well. When rates go up, farmland does not as well. Now, my personal expectation is that we're in a period of low interest rate environment, and not even for the next decade, maybe for a very long time. Japan is there already since the 90s. Europe is there since 2008, never really exited that. And US, we had that period, then COVID hit. Now we're back to inflation-protected treasuries trading at negative rates, which tells you something about the expectation for inflation and rates as well. But I think farmland, that's a risk. If rates go up, that's a risk. Next is climate change, of course, and water. Land that is in climate vulnerable areas can become a stranded asset. We talk about farmland being a really good tool for preserving your investment because you look at land in places like Chicago, Iowa. I mean, it's been cornfield for 100 years. It'll be for another 100 years. So it's really like such a great tool, but you have to adjust for climate change because if it's a place that suddenly doesn't have water or doesn't have people to farm, like places like Kansas, it will go from being fertile land to zero. That's one of the key things we look for in our underwriting and in how we look at farmland. So those are, I think, the big risks that people understand. Other risks just globally is making sure the reason we invest in US, we love US, is because there's tremendous property rights. Your property is protected. It's protected by the laws. It's protected in a kind of global way by the military. It's protected by sort of the state laws. And so in other places of the world, farmland might be subject to expropriation by the government. If you invest in fertile land in Ukraine, and then Russia shows up, like what happened with Crimea. Well, now you're screwed. There's definitely geopolitical risks to think about. And then more locally, I would say, you know, the typical risks we look at just kind of more mundane risks. It's soil, water, supply and demand for your end markets. You know, we talked about hazelnuts, making sure that you're not entering, let's say, a market that is maybe has very volatile, very risky supply demand dynamics, such as dairy, right, has been having really struggling. You want to make sure that so the land is good soil, good operator, good water in the right water district if it's permanent crops. And then you want to make sure you're buying at the right price. Same as in real estate. You want to make sure that you're buying at a good price, you're not overpaying. So we always do analysis of comparables, seeing how the deals around the area have sold, what will drive the dynamic of pricing in the next 5-10 years to make sure that you're buying in the right point of the market, in the right place of the market. I would say those are the main ones. We actually have a fairly robust risk methodology that we publish. So for every deal, we put out a risk rating that touches on 8 major risks and show where the deal is on that risk reward spectrum. Oh, and of course, on the purely financial deal side, does the deal have debt? It is a lower risk deal, but typically lower return. If it has some debt, that's a higher risk deal, higher returns. We never will do kind of crazy debt structures that real estate sometimes has, you know, senior debt, junior debt, mezzanine. But we'll put in a little bit of debt because debt is very attractively priced in farmland right now. It's backed by Farmer Mac, by US governments. You get really good rates and it's a shame not to take kind of advantage of that.
I know you mentioned at the beginning of the show that you and Farm Together primarily focus on crops and you don't really do much in the pasture space. But so this may or may not be a risk for you guys, but maybe farmland in general. But when we see companies like creating the fake burger patties, the Impossible Burger, things like that, is that a risk at all to farmland investing? I mean, I think it's so small, right? I mean, you're talking about all these crops and all these different nuts, corn, all these different things that go into all this other stuff that we eat, even outside of just eating it as itself. So my guess is it's probably relatively small, but I'm curious to hear from an expert such as yourself, as this trend grows to fake food, is it an issue?
I think we should never underestimate the speed with which innovation propagates. Just ask Blockbuster. So it's definitely a trend that we watch. And we actually had some calls with Impossible Foods because we'd like to buy farms that align with, you know, this new trend in food, whether it's vegetable protein, plant-based protein, whether it's organic and regenerative, whether it's ancient grains and kind of new types of crops. I do see it as a risk. Honestly, I think if that becomes something that is suddenly widely acceptable, if people start eating less meat, because whether it's for health reasons, for ethical reasons, for climate change reasons, that could be a headwind. And that's partially why we're not in pasture land right now. But at the same time, you have just massive growth in demand due to populations in places like China. They eat pork, they eat beef. That is a massive new middle class emerging in places like Russia, in Brazil, that has more, you know, carnivorous trends. It's a more complex equation there. For us as Farm Together, we will just offer whatever is growing, is not trending, is growing, is in demand. And so if there is a great farm that supplies possible foods beyond meat, and we can be there, we'll do that. But I think, look, again, feeding what's going to be 9, almost 10 billion on our little blue dot, it's not an easy task. And I think we need kind of all hands on deck a little bit to solve that problem, whether it's food waste, whether it's vegetable proteins, lab-grown meat. One thing I definitely don't want to be seen as is that we bash some part of the market. I think it's all really great people working hard on bringing us food, and whether it's beef or vegetable protein or dairy, I eat everything. Seafood, another great market that I would love to maybe explore one day. Maybe it's a fish farm. And so I don't think it's a risk at the moment, but definitely, you know, I think the industry shouldn't sit on their hands and definitely should watch what's happening there.
So considering all the different risks that we just talked about, how should someone allocate their portfolio to farmland investing, specifically in the current environment that we're in?
I think for us, we always recommend, as an investing in general, a diversified portfolio. And in farmland, diversification would be making sure that you buy in different types of deals, meaning some of them just a pure lease deal, some of it might be a development deal, right? That has a variety of different geographies, different crops, different structures, that you have a well-diversified portfolio. And then we have people that have some either emotional attachment to a particular product. I love hazelnuts. I can eat them all day long. I mean, I go through like squirrel, almonds, hazelnuts. I actually had one of our farms send a goodie bag, which is great. Little perks of this job. And so some people have also particular views on maybe organic. They want to support a particular region or geography. And so you can do that as well. And what we also want to start doing is increasingly telling more stories of farmers. There's some really remarkable stories of second, third generation immigrant farmers developing farms that they had, for example, back in India. Younger farmers that are, you know, 25, 26, taking over the family farm and working with us to ensure that transition. And so I think also for investors on the platform that maybe would like to express interest in a particular geography or support a particular type of farming, such as regenerative, organic, would love to hear from them as well and from your listeners what they would like to see, because we, you know, we're here to partially serve our clients and what they want to invest in. But, you know, to sum up, I think just as everywhere else, making sure you have a well-diversified portfolio and kind of looking at the deals that come up and building that.
You mentioned earlier in the show that farmland investing tends to be pretty stable and have relatively low volatility compared to other asset classes. How do you expect that stability to be tested due to COVID-19? How do you see farmland performing during and after COVID-19?
When we say farmland performing, what's interesting is if you look actually at the prices of commodities, agriculture commodities, it is a very volatile thing. I mean, you look at corn prices, it'll be like $6 a bushel, $3 a bushel. And yet when you look at the farmland in the corn farmland, the volatility will be like 3% a year. And so it's like, what's going on here? And that's what I think is really interesting about farmland investing is that it is very much a lease business. So if you think about analogy, maybe like a Starbucks storefront would be a good analogy where you buy, you know, a storefront property, you rent it out to Starbucks, and coffee prices are volatile, but Starbucks pays you a fixed lease that doesn't really depend on how much coffee they have sold or what the coffee bean prices are. And that is how row crop farmland works. The way it kind of works is that, and farmland in general. So the way it oftentimes works is that the farmer will rent it from you, and renting land, it's almost like every year you will decide how much land you're going to rent and then buy fertilizer and buy your machinery inputs, things like that. It's kind of like a decision that is almost like a fixed component in the farmer's mind. And because of that, the leases are fixed and there's only a small variable component. And that's why COVID for farmland. So I'll tell you, the Encri Farmland Index was down 0.5%, or roughly less than that in Q1 of 2020, is now up, so roughly flat for the year in Q2 2020, while, you know, everything else was up and down 30-40%. This was actually, I think, only the third time that the farmland index was down for the quarter. So having said that, some parts of the market have been more volatile. We have seen almonds take a hit. The almond prices went from something like 2.7 a pound to $2 and less a pound. Partially, though, this is due to one, the ports were closed in San Francisco, in LA, in Oakland due to COVID. So there was an issue of getting them out. That definitely, so there's a kind of a backlog right now. But also what overlaid that was a record crop of almost 3 billion pounds of almonds expected, because the industry did so well that the harvest was better than expected, which actually for your farms, we have to see how our almond farms done, but we expect higher yields than we underwrote. So what it means is that while the prices were down, the harvest was higher. So you got more almonds for lower price, which, by the way, you know, if you and your listeners, you eat almonds, you drink almond milk, hopefully you'll see that reflected in the prices on the shelves. But that has been a short-term hit. But longer-term, demand for almonds and the very limited supply of farmland that can grow almonds, it's really just, you know, that the parts of California that can grow them gives us comfort that long-term trends are favorable. And so that kind of comes back to how much volatility you want to take on your investing and on your cash flow. So for almond deals that we have, some years will have higher payouts than expected, some will be lower. For the raw kind of corn deal we have, the lease there is fixed, and you're just going to be getting that fixed lease with a little bit of a revenue component. But if corn does better, you'll get a higher payout. So you get a bit of both worlds. So you as an investor, you need to say, okay, how much volatility in my cash flows am I actually comfortable with? And how long of a period do I want to take in terms of my hold period? But what I will say is, I think, Robert, you and I here agree that volatility doesn't equal risk. To me as an investor, risk is, am I going to lose money? When I get my money back, did I get more or less? And volatility, yes, it's new. Not good to see my stocks go down 30%, go up 30%, but it's, did I lose money? And I think farmland is just like what I love about it. It is such a great value preservation tool, especially if you are worried about inflation, because farmland does tremendously well in periods of inflation. It has outperformed everything, including gold. That's because food is literally the components here. Food, fiber, fuel, feed is what we call, you know, in farmland. And that what goes into inflation. So farmland literally is inflation. And so I think that farmland is only not low volatility, but also low risk of losing your principal.
Yeah, I definitely do agree that volatility does not equal risk, in my opinion. If you're closer to retirement, then yeah, maybe volatility could be considered risk. But that's been one of my big problems as I went through my MBA as well. In academia, they always quantify risk as volatility. And I just, as being a value investor, a Warren Buffett style value investor who's been studying it for years, I just had a really hard time. I could understand it, but I didn't agree with it. And I don't think my professor enjoyed my disagreements with him. But
I think, Robert, is even all the books published on the financial crisis were because people, financial engineers, got obsessed with this notion of risk being volatility. And then, you know, we had famous book Black Swan by, his name escapes right now, Nassim Taleb. Yeah, and his last book, Skin in the Game, is great. I think important to remember about investing is use your common sense. Common sense trumps all the fancy financial engineering, things like that. And to me, talking about real estate, we thought that New York apartments were like the safest thing ever, right? Nothing could touch it, New York office. And like that is the segment that has been hit the most. San Francisco rents in studios are down 30%. San Francisco apartments was another safe investment. So you never know what the future holds. That's why you should diversify. Think about preservation of capital. Think about not just sort of what the historic returns have been, but what are you investing in? What is the nature of your investment? Understand the kind of that. And that, I think, will guarantee, what sort of guarantee, horrible word to say in the investing, but I think that will is the best thing you can do to meet your financial goals long term.
And for me, when I find myself worried about volatility, I'm young. I mean, I'm 25, so I still have plenty of time. And a lot of people listening to the show are younger, probably on the younger side of 40 or 50, meaning they still have a while to invest too. Probably most people listening aren't in their 70s and 80s who really have to worry about the short term. So take a step back, look at the chart. Volatility looks kind of crazy if you look at it on a monthly basis, even on a yearly basis. But you zoom out, you look at that chart on 5 years, and we're talking stocks here, not real estate, but you look at it on a 5-year, even 10-year chart. I mean, there's no volatility. It's really just a pretty straight line for the most part. So we talked briefly at the beginning of the show that you became an entrepreneur by founding Farm Together. And then we just had a full discussion about what farmland investing is. So what exactly is Farm Together more specifically, and how does it make investing in farmland easier and accessible?
We are a tech-enabled investment platform. I really focus on the words tech-enabled because farmland, what's difficult about it and why it hasn't seen yet the same level of openness, let's say real estate investing, is because information is spread out. It's a very opaque market. It's hard to collect information. So that's why we're using technology, things like imaging, soil sensors, water remote sensors, to really make it easy for us to analyze. And then what it means is that making it easy for us to bring it to you. And so meaning that we don't need to charge crazy fees for you to actually invest in the deals and be able to actually open up the size of the market, the segment of the market that is that fragmented $1 to $10 million space, which is actually most of farms. Most of farms are not big. They're medium sized. They're only a few million dollars. So that's been the big challenge that we're solving. So Farm Together, it's a San Francisco, New York based company. It's a mix of sort of financial and tech people that have combined decades of institutional farmland investing experience, really best in class companies that I firmly believe we worked for, partnering with generational farmers, people that have been doing this literally for, you know, third, fourth generation, to also have that boots on the ground, that really unique view on farms that you only get by working land for years, to bring you high quality institutional farmland managed by high quality institutional level operators. And that's really us. And then, you know, it's farmtogether.com. it's really easy to invest. I mean, even I sometimes get blown away by the great work of developers. And I was checking out it on my phone over the week. I was like, wow, this is really fast. Like Gmail takes longer to load. And so it's integrations with online signing, with your IRA provider, if you want to do it in a retirement account, with your solo 401k, with your trust. We really have a lot of integrations. You can invest through a variety of different vehicles. You can read everything online, schedule interview sessions with our investment team if you need to ask more questions, listen to our webinars. There's a lot of educational materials really to learn more on farmtogether.com. There's a whole learning center now that our team worked really hard to put out. It's like a definitive, you know, guide to farmland investing, everything to know. And once you invest, you get all your information electronically. We'll get your K-1s to you. We'll get it on time. It's always a big issue in real estate investing. We'll get it to you on time. I mean, last year, we got it out very quickly. We'll get you the K-1s, and you can see all your holdings online in a very easy to follow manner. When your next payout is coming out, you can get your updates. And you can also see it very soon in the future. We'll have it so you can see it by geography and even zoom in and see, you know, on Google Maps, like, here's my farm, here's my farm. And ideally, we'd have cameras stay there one day so you can even see, like, what's going on? What's that bee doing? Get to work, bee. So really just checking out on your farm, right? And learning more about what it takes to grow your food. We want to give you a sense of connection to the people that grow your food, to the land that grows your food. And so you actually get to learn about, I think, what's so fundamental to our very existence.
When we talk about these alternative assets, it tends to be only open to accredited investors. Is that the case with farmland investing?
It still is the case, but I'm sure your listeners know this because they're sophisticated investors, but the new regulations by SEC have liberalized what constitutes an accredited investor. Now, for example, holders of Series 7, Series 65, Series 82 qualify, and I think it's going to be more and more options emerging on how you can invest because now professional organizations like the CFA, maybe the CPA might apply to become if you hold the CPA, it could be an accredited investor. And we are working for 2021 to hopefully bring deals to non-accredited investors as well to make it more accessible. There's still a lot of hurdles to clear to bring it to non-accredited investors. The legal aspects are non-trivial, what you can say, how you can say it. And so we're still working on that, but hope to bring that definitely soon enough. I mean, there's no reason that we have an internal tagline. We want every American to own a piece of America, and we want to achieve that. So stay tuned. Hopefully 2021 we'll start having deals for non-accredited investors as well.
Artem, just like our last conversation, I learned a ton about an asset class that I had really known nothing about, but I continue to be fascinated by it. For those listening today that are also interested in learning more and might want to connect with you, where's the best place for them to go?
Farmtogether.com is always a great place. Email info@farmtogether.com. We reply and check every email. And my personal email is artem@farmtogether.com. So it's spelled A as in apple, R as in romaine, T as in tango, E as in echo, and M as in mango@farmtogether.com.
And as always, I'll be sure to put a link to all those different resources that Artem just mentioned in the show notes below in your favorite podcast player or on our website at theinvestorspodcast.com. Artem, thanks so much for joining me. Really appreciate it.
Really a pleasure. Thank you, Robert.
All right, guys, that's all I had for this week's episode of Real Estate Investing. I'll see you again next week.
Thank you for listening to TIP. To access our show notes, courses, or forums, go to theinvestorspodcast.com. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any decisions, consult a professional. This show is copyrighted by the Investors Podcast Network. Written permissions must be granted before syndication or rebroadcasting.